CliffCentral.com.
All right, all right, all right. So a couple of things I want to quickly tell you about. You remember we did a series called The Naked Economy with Ernest North from Naked. And we've now got them telling you about some of the products that they do and some of the things that they're involved in. But we're also talking to them about some other things that may come up very soon. I wanted to let you know that even though we've been talking about how Naked's insurance offering differs from everyone else's, this is probably one of their best perks. So take a listen to this. Times are changing. We know this. Petrol is expensive. We know that too. People are working from home and people are using their cars differently. Everything has changed. So with Naked's cover pause, you can actually pause the accident portion of your cover on the days where you're not driving. This is terrific. I mean, why not save that money? If you're not driving, why should you be paying for accident cover, for example? You can save up to 50% on your premiums. It's just one click on the Naked app. And if, for example, like my business partner, Rena, who's in New York at the moment, she's not using her car, she pauses the accident cover while it's at home, and she doesn't have to worry about paying for that entire 2 weeks that she's going to be there. Isn't that clever? Mash, that's clever, right?
That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
That is freaking amazing.
It
wow.
Is. So, it's amazing. You don't need to sit on your phone for 40 minutes to tell them that your car is going to be parked somewhere. You just click it on your own on the app. Whilst you're on cover pause, your stationary cover is still in place. Your car still remains covered for theft or fire or Mother Nature, even a runaway airport trolley. You know, all of that stuff still covered. Mm. When you need to drive again, you just resume your cover with one click on the Ooh. Naked app once again. Visit naked.insure or download the Naked Insurance app to sort out your insurance without a phone call. Naked Financial Technology is an authorized financial services provider. Very good. How is that, Dr. Hanan? Jeez, just now. My God.
Sure.
Jeez. How's Ash's story?
Yeah.
Sure. What a story.
Mm-hmm. So a lot of people who, you know, you reckon you've got problems and you hear about other people's problems and you suddenly go, I'm not going to complain so much anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean,
absolutely.
Two deaf parents having to move out of Eastern Europe in the 80s, then moved to Canada, French and English, then your two sisters just disappear, leaving you with the responsibility. I mean, it's just busy. It's busy, busy, busy. There's a lot going on in this poor woman's life. And then she decides, bugger that, I'm moving to Cape Town and I'm going to start again. And she just wants, she just wants to reconcile. But as Dr. Hanan said, you just got to accept that if you want to reconcile but the other party doesn't, nothing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like,
that advice.
It was like a masterclass in like how we should all be thinking about relationships that aren't working, you know? Anyway.
Yeah. It's also about being, if you think about a past relationship that you've had, an intimate relationship, it's that you still are grieving or missing. It's about loving the ideal of what it could have been and letting go of that. You aren't really missing the reality of what it was because it was shit.
It was shit. Exactly.
And you're still in love with what the ideal could have been.
I mean, people love to convince themselves of the fantasy becoming the reality, but it doesn't, you know? We can't have this this cognitive dissonance in our head, this idea that, oh, well, just because I want something, I can manifest it into reality. Sometimes you can't, and especially when it involves another person, because they've got to actually want to bring their side of the bargain. If they don't, it's a disaster. Anyway.
Hence the advice to act first and then let your emotions follow.
I love that.
That's some profound stuff.
It's so clever. Mm. And you know how many people do the opposite every day and then they complain about how their lives aren't working out? Like,
yes.
But I felt this way, so I ended up doing this. It's ridiculous.
But.
So, all right, Leanne, you want to tell us about this blue mermaid? And I mean, normally I'd say this stupid story and we should ignore it, but just explain what the hell's happening here. And I'll put a picture up as well because people need to see this.
So she's making international news and it's really cool because she's South African and she doesn't wear a mermaid suit. She's dubbed the blue-haired mermaid. And she's very much involved in free diving. She's an instructor. She explores the ocean with great white sharks. Obviously, this comes with many challenges, including that she needs to hold her breath for up to 4 minutes at a time, which she has described as her own superpower.
All right, you see,
her
name's Zandi. I immediately yes? thought this is a girl who thinks she's a mermaid and has some...
No.
You know, like
I thought so too.
Yeah, one of these lunatics is... You know, these people who think they're a My Little Pony or they think that they're a butterfly. So I'm glad to hear that's not her.
She's definitely a realist.
Okay.
She herself, mm-hmm. her name's Andile Ndlovu, she's 33 years old.
Mm-hmm.
She nicknamed herself the Black Mermaid.
Okay.
And she has an all-female team of marine biologists who are tackling sharks in the name of science.
So this is here in South Africa. At. So where is this, in KZN or in the Cape?
I'm not entirely sure. Maybe revealed, maybe all over.
Okay.
She works far as like Hans Bay, Mossel Bay, East London, etc. And we need to remember as well that endangered sharks include great white sharks. They're an endangered species, have been since 2006.
And she's out there swimming with these things. She's got no, she's not afraid or anything. Wow.
Yeah, absolutely. She's all about the research, the preservation of these sharks themselves, as well as their habitats. And, you know, they're kind of dangerous. So I just see her as like a really powerful being. She may not just be a mermaid, but she's definitely someone that I admire. So her fellow biologists are Alison Towner and Lee Denecker. They get really up and close and personal because they tag great whites so that they can track their migration patterns. It involves a lot of close on action with these terrifying animals.
I saw a horrible, horrible video this morning. Someone sent me on Instagram and I'd just woken up and I had to watch it like three times. And it was apparently this guy was swimming in like one of those glass boxes, watching the shark.
And
the shark actually broke through it and almost bit him. And
no.
I'm like, these animals are not. I'm sorry, there are a couple of things that have always freaked me out. And I could say there are three ways I absolutely would not like to die. I don't want to be eaten by a shark. I don't want to be eaten by a crocodile. And I don't want to be eaten by one of those Komodo dragons.
I was waiting for that one.
Jesus.
Don't want to be eaten, period.
No, full stop. I don't want to be eaten. It's such an undignified way to die. But there was this video. Somebody sent me on Facebook of a Komodo dragon. And I mean, she knows I don't like these big lizards, right? This thing basically comes along and it walks like this, you know, they're just so revolting and prehistoric and evil. And it comes up to this this antelope. It's obviously bitten. It's like a little buck. It's like a deer. And it's bitten it already. Mm. So now the bacteria in its mouth is so poisonous that the thing dies. So all it has to do is wait for it to fall down. And then the video shows this thing walking up to this deer and it basically picks it up in its jaw, and it just swallows the whole thing. It like the hoof, the horns, the hooves, everything just swallows the whole thing and goes, you know, like just kind of knocks its head back and then swallows this whole deer down until all that's left is just the last two, the two hind legs hooves is all that remains sticking out of its mouth. And I watched this. I was so disgusted. After that, I swore I didn't need to eat for the rest of the day that I saw it. It was horrible.
Sure. No, being so eaten.
If you want to follow her on Instagram, she is Zandi the Mermaid, all one word.
Zandi the Mermaid.
And she is so inspiring. Talking about Dr. Hanan, one of her latest grams says, a reminder you can be anything you want to be.
Yeah.
She gives some advice. She says, don't be afraid. You can do hard things. Go fetch your life.
Okay.
Very inspiring woman. Love that.
I like it. Well, speaking of inspiring, researchers estimate that 40 to 50% of our actions on any given day are done out of habit. That's almost half. So atomic habits are a regular practice or routine that is not only small and easy to do, but also the source of incredible power and a component of the system of compound growth. What am I talking about? Well, in this week's episode of Leadership Books Unpacked, you can hear Manda Tsifularo and Ngobile Ngobo, who will unpack Atomic Habits, Tiny Changes, a Remarkable Result. It's a book by James Clear. And you can listen to the precy of that on Leadership Books Unpacked, wherever you get your podcasts, proudly sponsored by Hollard Life Solutions and Superlead. So there's another place that you can get some inspiration. Cool, huh?
Yes.
Very good.
Very, very nice. So I mentioned we'll be talking to Chris Tosi in a little while. He is doing 86 days in the Kruger National Park, and he is doing it with a charity angle this time. He's raising money for the Smile Foundation, and we'll be talking to him about that in just a little while, probably about half past, so about 15 minutes from now. We've got lots of other things to talk to you about this morning, and he's putting amazing stuff on Instagram, by the way, so you need to go and check that out if you aren't already. He's got lots and lots of cool stuff going on. So plenty.
Speaking of dangerous animals. Wow.
Yeah. Well,
And interestingly enough, this aunt that I speak of who's here to visit, she has two of her children here. And they're, as mentioned, I think 19 and 22. And the amount of times that we've said to them, please don't be silly, because they're off to the Kruger National Park.
Oh, yeah.
Don't be silly and roll down windows and just obey all the rules.
You have to tell people this stuff, especially foreign tourists. They think it's like a zoo where you can lean out of the window and, you know, you can get out of the car. And you know how many people have been eaten by, you know, lions and things
and like that. And mostly tourists.
Correct.
Wow.
It's so weird that you should even mention like lions and leopards and things. I had the most bizarre dream last night that I was being chased by a pack of lions.
Oh.
So this being eaten,
pack of lions?
Yeah, this being eaten by animals thing is clearly on my mind at the moment.
How did you end up surviving?
I don't know.
Did you survive?
I made it. They didn't get me. But it was a fucking terrifying dream, I can tell you that much.
I do dream often. It's a recurring one for me, that I'm in a lodge somewhere and someone's left the door open, like a stable door.
Yeah.
And I'm making my way to the door, but I can see through the window the lions making their way to the door as well. One of those things where you just can't get there in time and they're coming through and you're pushing the door and you don't have the strength. Oh,
oh no.
Yeah. That and being chased around a tree by a rhino with a particularly huge horn.
Yeah, you have very.
You guys have different types of dreams.
What? You don't have dreams like this?
No, most of my dreams are just, okay, very terrifying, of course, but don't involve animals
very
ever.
Terrifying.
It's just me sitting up in my bed and there's something in the corner. We just stare at each other for hours, or me just falling. That's pretty much my dreams every night.
I like there's something in the corner that you stare at each other for hours. Do you ever hear like a funny noise in the night and your imagination goes wild and you start thinking, oh, it's definitely, you know, a monster or a killer? And especially if it's like late at night and you wake up and you hear the sound and you're still like a little bit in that sleepy kind of twilight zone, so you're not really thinking clearly and you imagine all kinds of really awful things going on.
Hmm. I've told you about the condition I have called hypnagogia in the past.
Yeah.
And that is where your eyes are open. So it's not like dreaming, but your eyes are open and you're seeing things in front of you. And it's so realistic. So just the other night, I opened my eyes and on the wall in front of me was this enormous rain spider running across the wall at breakneck speed. And I knew I needed to find this thing before it got into my linen. Turned on the lights, got my slippers on, got something to hit it with.
And Mash, by the way, she's terrified. She is absolutely shit scared of spiders.
Oh,
sure. Aren't you all?
I'm not.
And at this point, I think once the lights are on, I can't see it. And now I've got to try and convince myself that it was a hypnagogic experience and it wasn't reality.
I know you're terrified of spiders, and that must be the worst kind of dream for you to have. But I do think Steve points out something interesting here that's probably worth Dr. Hanan talking to you about, Leanne. Who wants to be chased by something with a big horn? Well, Leanne Moll, obviously.
I'm coming to get you.
Yeah, exactly. We wonder what the symbolism there is. Huh? Ruth says, those are my worst, but again, Freudian sexual energy when you dream about...
Snakes.
Snakes. Oh, yeah, yeah, okay. So snakes and in your case, Leanne, horns.
And horns. Oh, Leanne, look at you.
But like a little like a little tokolosh, someone said earlier, a little tokolosh sitting in the corner watching MASH all night.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't be surprised.
Like peeping out from behind the curtains going, hello, MASH.
Yeah.
Can you see me? I can see you.
You know, the most terrifying thing happened to a friend of mine. She lives in Waterfall. And so basically upstairs, her neighbors upstairs, they have a sibling. It's mm-hmm. it's a couple that lives upstairs, but one of the guy's siblings lives with them and he's like mentally ill. So she told me that this guy actually climbed down the balcony and got to her balcony, to her apartment. So she actually, she heard sounds, but as usual, you're like, I'm in a complex, nothing's up. I'm on like the second floor.
Yeah.
Of course, there's nothing, you know? And she looks out, it's dark out, but like there's light coming from outside. And she sees a silhouette of a person on the balcony.
Oh, God. Oh,
and she freaked out. She called all the management, all the security, everyone. And they actually came in and they were like, yeah, there's a man on your balcony. And the guy from upstairs came down. He's like, I'm so sorry. It's my brother. He's not okay.
Jesus.
Yeah. He must like you. But I was like,
oh wow. He must like
this
you.
He's moving next weekend.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yeah. So sometimes those sounds are, sometimes you shouldn't dismiss them quite as easily.
Well, Jared says, I'm 34 years old and I still run up the stairs when I put the lights off. I know there is nothing there, but my body just goes into flight mode. Well, you know what, Jared? I've got to say, like, big kudos to Jared for actually owning up to that.
Yeah.
A lot of people would
no, that's definitely...
They'd say, no, I'm not scared. I'm a grown man. I don't get afraid of the dark. Listen, if you've ever watched a really scary movie, this is always when it happens to me, and I'm not ashamed or shy to admit this, but if I watch a really scary movie on my own and then I have to go down to the kitchen and get some water or something, like running back up those stairs.
It doesn't matter how old you are.
It doesn't matter. You always think there's something, right? There's around that corner or under there or out in the garden with a pair of eyes watching you, some creature that you just saw in the movie.
Sure.
You can be the world's biggest atheist and not believe in spirits or anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you'll still look behind you when you're walking down the passage.
Yes. You'll even sleep and like cover your head with the blankets because in the movie, something was standing next to someone. So you're like, nope.
Imagine
or like when you're washing your face in the shower and you're about to open your eyes and you think there's going to be someone standing right there.
Does that happen to you?
Yes.
Does that happen to both of you?
All the time.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's very normal. I wash my face and my eyes open.
No, my least favorite ones are, and you see these things on like social media too, where the guy like switches on the light and there's a thing and then he switches the light off again and then he switches it on and it's gone.
Yes.
It's like a thing is gone.
Yes.
Fuck.
Ooh,
horrible.
That is terrifying.
And it's like this girl standing there in like a sheet with the long black hair or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or like when you wipe the mirror because it's misty and you see something behind you. You turn around and it's gone.
Yes.
That reminds me of Thabo Modisane because he loved Halloween. His birthday's on Halloween.
Yeah.
And he loved watching scary movies.
Mm-hmm. And he'd watch them on his own.
So much fun.
Which I've never understood. No. The only time I watch a scary movie is if I've got, it's usually if I'm in a relationship and and the girl is like, she's also really scared. And then you kind of spend the whole night frightening each other. And it's like, it's a fun thing to do. But otherwise, I don't see any reason to do those things. It's horrible.
When I was married,
I don't want to watch that shit. Sorry.
When I was married and we were watching a scary movie, if I needed a loo break, I'd make him come with me so that I knew that he wasn't going to stand around the corner and give me a fright.
See?
Hey, Bo Lien.
A lot of trust in those relationships, eh?
Yeah.
Sure. I like bathing with the lights off and just lighting a couple of candles every evening. That's straight up how I bath. That is how I bath every evening, Monday through to Sunday. And every time I wash my face, I just see a monster. Every time I just look in the mirror, wipe the mirror. It's terrifying. It really is terrifying as someone who watches a lot of horror movies. But at some point, you do become desensitized.
Yeah, eventually. Well, I don't know. I still remember the first time I watched The Exorcist. And of course, one of the most spine-chilling scenes was where her head rotated 360 degrees. Mm-hmm. And I remember I used to have to walk past my brother's bedroom to go to the loo. And I used to think if I looked into the bedroom, he'd be on the bed with his head rotating.
Which means, of course, that you thought your brother was possessed by demons, which is hilarious.
And only at night.
Yeah. No. Listen, this is the sort of shit that when you're a kid, your imagination takes control, right? And you're able to imagine almost anything happening. I don't really, the movies that scare me, I've said this before, aren't the ones with like monsters and, you know, creatures or any of that stuff. Those are obviously scary until you see the creature and you're like, oh, please, that's ridiculous. Yeah. And if you don't know what it is, that's way more frightening. But to me, the scariest of all are the ones where they have humans, but they're like, they're really inbred, or they're like, they're monstrous looking humans.
Yes.
Those are way worse than the creatures with the wings or the claws or the teeth or whatever. I'm not scared of those. But you find those humans in the woods who have like been, you know, howling and cackling and that kind of shit. That would scare me. We're going to speak to Chris in a moment. He's in the woods. He's out in the bush.
Yeah.
I hope he hasn't encountered any inbred humans or anything out there. Animals you can deal with, but inbred humans, no. Yeah.
Oh, no. Mm-mm. I used to be terrified of those until Netflix bombarded us with zombie movies. Mm. Every 2 minutes, there was a new zombie movie, a new zombie series. Eventually, I just stopped being scared of those too.
Yeah, I'm not scared of zombies. As far as I'm concerned, a zombie, as long as they're the slow ones that you usually get, the slow zombies, you don't want those World War Z ones that are fast. Those were shit.
Those ones that climb on each other and scale walls.
Yeah, that's not good.
They're Olympic zombies.
Mm-mm. Absolutely. Sanella says, it's not just you, Mash. I also love bathing or showering in the dark. Not even candles, just complete darkness. I've been doing it for so many years. It's so therapeutic and it heightens your senses.
Yes. No. Right. You clearly do not have a wild imagination, because I would be thinking the water had turned to blood, or it was raining spiders, and I didn't know. No thanks.
Well, a lot of people are bringing up Stranger Things, which is obviously one of the most popular shows in the world at the moment. And there are lots of weird and scary creatures in that movie. I mean, that TV show, right?
I'm not scared of those creatures, really. I don't get scared in that series. I watch it purely because I love the way they've recreated the 80s so well. And just watching kids not survive with a cell phone and remembering how we used to ride our bikes and do that shit. that's what I love about it.
Zach has got a hell of an imagination. I always imagine walking into my bedroom in the dark and I get the hardest slap right in the middle of my face from an old ashy hand. And you switch on the light and there's no one in the room. Dun, dun, dun.
I'd say, I'd laugh.
It's kind of kinky.
An old ashy hand. Are you two joking? It'd be horrifying.
Oh. Jeez.
Yeah. All right.
I'd love
to
be slept around in my room.
let's talk to Chris. We've been keeping this guy on hold for such a long time. Hey, Chris, how are you doing, man?
How's it going, guys?
Yeah, good.
Yeah, for sure, man. Have I got everything right on my side?
You have. And I'm
just
very...
if there's any sort of...
There's a bit of a delay, but it's not the end of the world.
Yeah, sorry, Brie. I'm in the Kruger Park. Eh?
So I can actually see the bush behind you. Now, when you say you're spending 86 days in the Kruger Park, you're not just in a car driving around and going to all the different campsites and like doing a five-star experience. This is not what you're doing, right?
Dude, I'm just one man in like a cheap 1,300 rand tent that I bought from Macro, and I've got a stretcher and a mattress and a sleeping bag and a pillow and a 300 rand cooler box. And I'm just doing everything on the cheap and on the fly, and I'm trying to raise as much money as possible as I can for smilefoundationsa.org. They perform free facial surgeries on, you know, disadvantaged children, you know, so if they're burnt in shack fires, which is pretty prevalent in the country, or any other sort of facial abnormality, cleft palate, Mobius syndrome, and so on. So that'd be really, really good work. They were one of my first clients when I started my design agency 25 years ago. So myself and Moira Gerst, we go way back. So that's just why I chose them.
I'm a little bit nervy here, guys. No, don't be nervous. I mean, I've been watching your stuff on Instagram for a long time now, and it's really, really cool to see somebody doing something fun like this. But you come from a you know, kind of corporate background, or at least an advertising background, and it's quite interesting to see you doing something completely different like this. And it must be, I mean, partly adventure, but also obviously the good cause that you're raising the money for. Are you a little bit nervous about being out there in the bush with all of these animals? I mean, what kind of encounters have you had so far?
You know, it's wild, yeah. So last night, prepping for the show, I was here at this, called the Salati 3638 Kruger Station, this awesome new restaurant. And I was here until like 11 p.m. and then the night security dude, Norman, came on duty. So we ended up chatting for an hour because he was such a lovely guy. So just recently, there was a rogue leopard cruising around. It attacked a staff member like last Sunday. The guys are right. It just got him by the back of the head, but he's in hospital recovering. And then the next weekend, the same leopard, it's an old sickly leopard. So it's unable to catch impalas anymore. So it targets human beings because we're obviously easy targets.
Wow.
Then this dude, it attacked another staff member the next Sunday night. And the Norman, it's his wife's brother that got attacked. So I got to hear like sort of a secondhand account of how the whole thing went down, because it's amazing how like the sort of bush telegraph gets broken down. Because when I first heard the story from staff at Satara, the whole story was that the second guy, the leopard, took his eye out, and you know, we're not sure if he's going to make it or not. Meanwhile, I chat to Norman and it's his wife's brother that got attacked, and the miracle, the leopard got him on the nose and he's got both of his eyeballs. So the oak's fine, and he's got a great story to tell. So, yeah, it's pretty wild here, man.
Well, listen, I mean, it would be really nice if you don't end up needing the Smile Foundation yourself after a leopard attacks you, because then we're going to have to waste all that money that you've raised to just fix you. I mean, a sickly old leopard is kind of a scary thing, and if it's targeting humans, you've got to keep an eye, front and back. Make sure that there isn't some leopard stalking you the whole time.
Yeah, but obviously it's a problem animal at, you know, at the end of its life cycle. So that took care of it, you know, it had to be done. It's done, you know, they've solved that case and it's filed away.
They've told you it's done, but maybe they're actually just waiting to get rid of you because you keep their security up late at night and make them do things that they shouldn't be doing. Mm-hmm. That'll be a hell of a story. Hey, how many days have you been in the Kruger so far?
Yeah, so today is day 34 of 86 days in hashtag 86 days in Kruger. And the way that I had the system for July, because if it was like the 26th of July, it meant that I was on the 28th day of the trip.
Right.
Now that we're on the 1st of August, now I'm on day 34. So my whole system is screwed. You know, it's like all of us trying to do our mathematics where we just don't stand a chance. So.
No.
I'm always sort of calling the wrong day or the wrong date or whatever. But like it sort of flows where I just kind of like wake up in the morning and then I sort of tell my story from beginning to end, you know, from like,
so,
and just the adventure. As
I mean, what makes this cool, you're able to move around and kind of be in the bush, actually walking around with these animals and things. Are the Kruger Park happy with that? Do they allow many people to do this? Did you have to get special permissions? And have you always got cell phone signal?
So, yeah, this project's very Wi-Fi dependent, and it's only really sort of become feasible in the last year or so, because Tourvest, which is like a, you know, subsidiary of Bidvest, and it's all owned by like Graham Joffe and those boys, You know, they've really upgraded the restaurants. There's cattle barons in like the main camps. That's Kapuza and Sitara, nice. And they've got like lightning fast Wi-Fi. So it just makes the whole thing possible. So when it comes to like a walking safari, you've got to book that through sand parks, and then you'll go out on like a morning walk. And I did an amazing one with two super experienced guides there at Sitara, Metwell Nkansi and Patrick. Like Metwell's been like one of the guides at Sitara for like 15 years. And there were six of us on the walk. And what they do is you sort of start the walk, and from the outset, they heard baboons calling in the background, and they picked up lion spur on like a sandy track. So then they test the group to make sure that we're going to stay in single file. Right. We're going to stay quiet and we can keep up. So they do like a little test where they really sort of push it through the bush and increase the speed. And then once they saw, okay, cool, these guys are sharp, we can take them into this lion encounter. And then like, as we got closer, these guys were just like, you know, just like detectives solving a crime. And it's just like we got closer and closer. And then suddenly there's one black-back jackal, two, three, four. And like, that doesn't happen unless something's going on. Mm-hmm. And they're like, are you guys ready for this? And I'm like, yeah, let's do this. And we got through the brush into a riverbed. And suddenly just like 16 lions just scatter. And like all we can do is you just see like flashes of yellow running left and right, left and right. And as soon as the sort of last one had exited, then we could all calm down. And then right in front of us, there's a dead bull giraffe, but like right there. They'd only just killed it. They'd only eaten the soft parts. They'd only eaten like the gums and the eyeballs and the testicles, you know, all the good bits. Mm. And then it was just a surreal, amazing experience. And
you've got to keep your eyes open, because those lions haven't just left. They're going to come back.
Yeah, but these guides know their game. And also lions are pre-programmed, you know, genetically programmed to fear human beings, because we've been persecuting them for thousands of years.
Of course.
So when they see the tall monkey with swinging limbs, they
get the hell out of there.
Hightail it. You know, they were reluctant to give up their kill. But I mean, as soon as we departed, they circled back. And then from a distant vantage point, we watched them back on the kill. You know, so it was a happy encounter for everyone. We disturbed them for a little bit, but I mean, they were cool. It's like three big adult males, females, and a bunch of cubs.
I said just now, I had this nightmare last night that I was being chased by lions, and you're lucky that wasn't your story, or else it would have been 35 days in the Kruger and done. That's it.
Man, so like last night, you want to talk about nightmares, I got like, me and this girl were sort of catching up, and I got like a little bit dirty on the phone chat, and I've got these new neighbors, and like these wannabe like Instagram crew where they've got like a couple's name like stuck on the side of their door. I don't know, you know, follow the Hamiltons or something. Mm-hmm. The oak comes and like bangs on my tent last night and says, hey bro, we can hear everything that's going on.
Oh no.
But I'm also like, that's totally not possible, because if you could, you would have known that we were like seconds from finishing, you know. So
oh Chris, no.
So like, this trip, I've also got just like, there's sort of no boundaries. I just relay everything as it happens. Oh, and if I wasn't talking to you guys now, this would be like on my morning stories on Instagram, where I'm at Christopher Tosi, TOSI. So it's just like, it's day to day, whatever happens. Like yesterday, I've been dying to go to this Kapuza golf course. I want to showcase like all the little nooks and crannies of Kruger Park, give people like insights and tips on how to make the most of your sightings and how to really enjoy the place. Like if you get a leopard, just stop, turn off the car, and let that animal decide if it wants to approach you or leave the scene, you know. And at least then, if you give it a chance to make its own decision, you've got a chance at like a really beautiful sighting. So yesterday, I've been procrastinating. I've just been too busy. But I finally made it off to Skakuza Golf Course. And on the way there, just randomly, I was there at the right time, encountered a pack of 20 wild dogs with like a crazy hyena interaction. And then went off to go showcase the golf course. And it was just like by like kismet design, you know, which is that like, you know, it's just like, it's pure, meant to be. Yeah. I got to the golf course on a Sunday when everyone's got their day off. So I met everyone that's running like the wild dog collaring program. I met guys that are working on like the rhino anti-poaching thing, that they've spent the weekend at like a bush lodge where, you know, no one's got access to it. And a couple of the sponsors were there for the weekend. I met like the general manager of one of the main Sabi Sands lodges, you know, and I told the guys that I'm here for 86 days and I'm trying to raise 8.6 million rand for smilefoundationsa.org, and they're all like on board. So it's all falling into place. And like, it's just amazing how like I got to the golf course on Sunday by design to meet those people. Plus I got this amazing like wild dog sighting as well. Have you got some of the videos on your site to show people?
I think we do. I'm just going to check quickly now, because I know Simpiwe was going to load them for us.
From my phone,
Well, no.
This works as well. Do it like this.
Yeah, we could see that. Yeah, all right. There we go. So just sort of narrate us through these stories as well. These are some of the sightings that you've seen recently.
Yeah, you should be able to hear it.
So they're all heading straight up to the nursery. There's the nursery road. There's this pack of hyenas.
All right, it's frozen for some reason.
Awesome interaction I've heard.
So, Chris, rather than this, tell me about some of the things that you really want to see that you haven't seen yet. You're only 34 days in already. By the way, you've only brought a few clothes. You've only brought, like as you said, basic camping equipment, cooler box. Is there anything that you wish you'd packed that you hadn't?
No, I'm pretty experienced at this. You know, I did the first 86 days last year during COVID from January to April, and cumulatively over the span of my life, you know, I'm like, yeah, I grew up in Pretoria. I went to Tux. We were there sort of at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I've been coming here my whole life. So, you know, so after this trip, I've definitely spent like, you know, more than 365 days in the Kruger National Park. So I know this place like the back of my hand, and there's not a lot that I haven't seen. But the other day was amazing on this one little dirt road. I was the first car down the track, and 6:15 in the morning, 15 minutes after the gates opened, I got a black rhino, a cow and a calf, but I mean 20 meters away from me, and I had them all to myself.
You don't see those easily.
Sublime and surreal.
All right, Mash, I just want to point out that Mash's face while you were explaining that there are lions and leopards
yes.
around here, he's not having a good time
testicles
hearing all this.
And
yeah.
Eyeballs.
I'm traumatized.
You wouldn't want to do this, right, Mash? This would not be for you.
No, this is definitely not for me. And with that said, how did you decide on the Kruger National Park specifically, Chris?
What is that? What's your connection to Kruger?
Sorry, guys, that last bit broke up. Tell me again.
Yeah, sorry. He just wanted to know.
Yeah, I can.
What made you choose the Kruger National Park specifically? And I've heard some people saying that, you know, the Kruger Park is in great condition. I've heard other people saying, oh, no, you know, it needs a bit of attention and work. Like, overall, give us a health check on the Kruger National Park.
Sure. I mean, it's a 2 million hectare paradise, you know, and it's just, you can't replicate the sort of like self-drive experience anywhere on earth. You know, it's unparalleled and unmatched. You can encounter anything, you know, the wildest of scenes. And I mean, so like I locked this one down yesterday, but I got invited to Rhino Walking Safaris, and they've got like a 12,000 hectare concession within the Kruger Park, which is just, you can't even imagine the scale of that. You know, so Kruger Park's like the size of Wales to begin with. And now this concession is 12,000 hectares, and we're going to be doing like walks in there. Plus one night I'm going to be sleeping on a raised wooden deck platform where like lions would hopefully be walking underneath us whilst we slumber during the night. But this place is so remote, and it's within the Kruger Park, that if there's a chance that if we saw a lion, that we might be the first human being that lion has ever seen in its life.
That's amazing. Like,
that's how massive this place is, you know, because also with all of the public roads in this place, you only really sort of get to see like, you know, 5% or 10% of the park in its entirety. But it's just like, it's a paradise. And I mean, it's run so well, you know, like, you know, it's like,
out of curiosity, is that by design that most of the park, you know, normal people can't see, that there are obviously parts of it that are kept completely pristine and where humans are not allowed in at all? Is that part of the design? Is that what was originally intended?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's a nature reserve first and foremost. So it's about protecting wildlife and protecting and conserving our heritage, you know, for future generations. So it's run by a dedicated team of wildlife scientists. And, you know, I would say the next most dedicated team is like the park engine for the roads and the fire breaks and just everything running. But I mean, like the scientists here, you know, that they bleed this place, you know, and the section rangers and the regional rangers, like, the guys are amazing to hang out with and just chat to you, and like, but they live it, you know, and no one's getting paid like Ferrari money here. They're doing it because it's a passion. And Yeah, it's like, so same with like ESCOM, you know, there's like a little bit of catch up happening,
yeah,
where things did sort of fall apart a little bit because the wrong guy was in the wrong position. He didn't have a degree. He didn't earn that spot. But now they're sort of filling that void with the right people in the right places.
Glad to hear.
The only thing that's lagging a little bit is like they're a little bit behind in some of the infrastructure. You know, some of the bungalows are like a little bit dilapidated, but they're getting there. You know, we're turning in the corner. It's a big ship that had to be turned since, you know, 1992.
Yeah.
And it's all coming together, guys. Mm. Yeah, it's all working out.
So, Chris, funnily enough,
you know, when I started the podcast, yeah.
No, I just wanted to know if you've got a favorite place in the Kruger, because there are lots of people who, you know, they love a certain spot and that's where they always go. And, I mean, there's so many beautiful unspoiled areas in there. I was in the park probably last year, May, must have been somewhere around there. And we went up to the top of this hill. Where it's just absolutely magnificent. The views are like 360 degrees around. You don't see a light at night. It's just the most magnificent place.
That's it.
And I'm sure that you've got a couple of places inside the park that are your like secret favorite places, and you don't even want to tell people about them because you don't want other people to go there. But you must have some.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so like there's one little, we call it secret road, but it's an open secret. And it's right by Chokwani, one of the main picnic sites. And basically, if you were to turn right to go up to the Orphan Dam bird hide, you get a cool view over the Orphan Dam. But if you just go past it, 50 meters past that road, there's like a secret little road that's hidden by a few bushes. And you go down that one, and then you get this completely much more expansive view of the Orphan Dam, but you're like nestled under these giant like jackalberry trees, and it's just like a paradise. You know, you feel like you're in like a fable, you know, some like storybook lost in time, and you can just chill there the whole day, a couple of beers, read a book, maybe listen to some, you know, Cliff Central podcasts, you know, things like that. And then like what else? Like also like Kruger Park's so special to so many people. You know, it's a feeling beyond a place. So like, the one day I'm driving down Baobab Loop and I'm showing people, like, let's go check out Baobab Tree. And then as I'm approaching Baobab Tree, I can see, oh, okay, something happened over here. And what has happened earlier that morning is that someone had gone and shoved, or, you know, just carefully placed 5 proteas in, like, you know, the knots of the Baobab Tree, and sort of just taken a moment to remember someone that was dear to them that has passed on, because they used to share this place. So this person's coming back.
Amazing.
Doing like a little special trip to that person. And yeah, it's like, I'll put that video up soon. It's just beautiful to see. So yeah, so many special places, so many good memories. It's, you know, my favorite junction in the park is like just southwest of Sitara. Like it's a sand road, the S36 and like the S125 junction. Where I just like on the last trip cleaned up over there, like often we would get this pack of 30 wild dogs, 30 wild dogs. Like if you got that video, you should play that.
Phenomenal.
But 30 wild dogs like around me, and then off they go to hunt, and they're just like cleaning impala. The next thing, they're all running at my car, chasing a scrub hare down. Yeah. The one dog grabs the scrub hare by the scruff of its neck and then starts like running around with it like a trophy while the other dogs are trying to like get it out of its mouth.
And
it's
making
just insane.
And making that incredible noise that they make.
Oh yeah, for sure. It's just like there's like small little like kind of like almost bird-like chirps, and that they're so excited. Wild dogs are just like the absolute best animal.
Well, rather than us playing a video, we're going to tell people to go and actually look at your Instagram, which is the best place to get all of this. I mean, that's really the best way to do
that's it.
So
yeah, I'm super interested to see what. When I started here 34 days ago, my Instagram account is just purely for friends and family, and it would just be photographs of my dog or me on a hike. And so I started here with 400 followers, and now I've got 1,994 when we started this show. Again, there's a little bit of kismet.
You've already got 2,008 as far as I can tell now. Go and follow Chris. It's Christopher Tosi, one word, on Instagram, and you can go and see what he's up to in the Kruger Park at the moment, doing all kinds of amazing things and raising money for a very, very good cause, the Smile Foundation. He's looking to raise way more than you started with, by the way, because you started off thinking you were just going to raise 86,000 Rand. Now you've decided you're putting a new target up, 860,000 Rand. So well done on that front. How's it coming along, by the way?
Sorry to interrupt, Gareth. It's 8.6 million Rand.
Jesus. All right. Even bigger.
I did that by design with you as well. You know, there's a sort of like African saying, catch a monkey slowly. And you know that I've been working to get on the show for like 2 months now, and I've sort of finished it off by sending you a 10-page letter with a masthead that said from the desk of Christopher Tozzi with like my P.O. box in Spicuza. So like, because I kind of know you. I've been watching you guys since day one. So like, I knew what would get your attention.
Yeah.
And then I did like a really low amount that would just be like, what is that? And then later on when I was just sort of, you know, getting you guys to like just commit, and I was like, oh, by the way, it's not 86,000, it's 8.6 million amazing. Over 86 days.
No, it's amazing.
And it's possible, because if you break it down, I just need, and here's the maths thing, but I just need 10,000 people to donate 860 Rand, and it's 8.6 million. Jeez. And already, like, the donations are flowing in, you know. I mean, a lady from Texas put in 3.5 grand yesterday.
Wow.
And also, like, you know, if we need 10,000 people to donate 160, I need 1,000 people to donate 8,600.
Right.
I need 100 people to donate 160,000. And so, like, you know, how it works is, like, so let's say, like, Rhino Walking Safaris, they've given me 2 days over there, so I'm going to give them exposure on social media, but I'm not asking them for a donation or anything because, you know, I'm really just dealing with, like, the camp manager.
Right.
But what's going to happen is that, like, you know, game reserves are like wine farms and like golf courses, you know, they're status symbols for like the elite, the super rich, you know, and I'm not even talking about like the local super rich, it's foreigners, you know, that own these companies. But at some point in the next month or two, my name's going to come up in a boardroom meeting and then they're going to, you know, like whatever, like, you know, Johan Rupert's son is going to show it, say, hey, check out this idiot over here, you know, doing this Kruger Park thing. And then they're going to say, all right, cool, you know, he's not a total douchebag, you know, let's, he has been in our game reserve, you know, it's worked out well, we got good exposure, let's throw 100,000 at this, you know, because, you know, the guys have got like, you know, FU kind of money. So, and then I'm hoping that it just becomes like a dick measuring competition between all of these wine farm owners and game reserve owners, you know, and then and then that way we'll do it. But the whole laugh of my thing is I'm always like pitching to like Elon Musk, you know, because like, guys, I need a Starlink system so that I can broadcast from everywhere, you know, because right now I'm sort of locked into being at like the primary camps and I really want to go like up north because there it gets very remote. And if Elon, if you guys can just ship a Starlink satellite system to my PO box here in Skakuza,
we
can catch fire. And also,
well,
and if you just want to pop in like 86 million rand for smilefoundationsa.org, you know, that's cool as well. We all from Pretoria. Someone's got to know his mother, right? We kind of like, he's 10 years older than us. Like, there's got to be one degree of separation between us and Elon Musk.
Well, I mean, you're in luck because he listens every morning, so I'm sure he'll be responding to you at some point.
Hi, Elon. Yeah.
Yeah.
We don't like to publicize it too much, but he's a regular.
Yeah. You don't want to, like, you know, encroach on his space. You know, you want to, you know, let him decide if he wants to come to you. Just like,
yeah,
that leopard.
Well, listen, dude, I love that you are living out your passion and raising money for a good cause.
So,
where are you?
That's the Salaki track in the background.
Okay.
So that's like that was the original sort of trade route, you know, from like Mozambique to South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
And let's do a walk. And if the Wi-Fi bombs, it bombs. So
yeah,
like this is the station.
All right.
It's like a cool little restaurant.
Nice. Yeah.
So they've refurbed this train.
Huh.
So everything here is owned by like Tourvest now, which is owned by Budvest, which is owned by Brian Jaffe. And that oak, he's going to donate a lot of money to this fundraiser.
I don't know if you're 100% right about that ownership thing, but anyway, yeah, I think Tourvest's separate from Budvest, as far as I know.
Oh, it's just like an unbundled part of it. You know, anything that's got the word vest in it is part of like that group.
Yeah. All right.
Trust me, I've done my homework on all of this stuff.
All right. I take your word for it.
I was going to say, yeah, quite plush.
Oh, that's
like
beautiful.
They've really brought it into the year 2022.
That's phenomenal.
Yeah, it's
nice.
It's like a cool like booth kind of vibe. What else can I show you? I mean, guys, wine cellar.
What's on the agenda for?
Year.
What's on the?
I know it's early, Leanne, but I mean, I don't mind if we do, right?
Yeah, Leanne, there's the wine cellar, especially.
Leanne, there you go.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Not too early.
Hey, doll, a Chardonnay for breakfast.
Listen, what's on your agenda for today?
I think after we wrap this up, then I'll do like a little live Instagram broadcast for a bit and just calm down. This has got me pretty hyped up. And then I'll go for a morning drive. It's a little bit overcast today, so the odds of seeing like something amazing are not like in your favor. Generally, the predators will sort of move around as the sun comes up because they want to sort of relocate and get to a comfortable place for the day.
Mm-hmm.
So with it being overcast, it just sort of, you know, just delays everything a little bit, and there's no rush to the day.
I love this, and I love that we got to speak to you this morning. Chris, keep up the good work, and we'll check in with you again.
Amazing, guys. Thanks so much for the opportunity.
All right, dude. Thanks very much, and nice to see you. There's Christopher Tozzi, okay, everybody. You can follow him on Instagram, and you can see what he's up to on his 86 days in the Kruger. I always love having people on the show who are just, you know, majorly into what they're doing, passionate about it. You can see how much energy and enthusiasm he has. He's not putting any of it on. It's great.
Someone's got to do it for us. If we're not going to do it, someone's going to do it.
Well, I thought you'd be persuaded when he took us into the wine cellar there, Leah. And I was like, you'll fly over there right now.
Have you seen my wine cellar?
There's something not right about you drinking on your own at home.
No, look. And I certainly don't have a wine cellar. I have empty racks of...
Yeah.
Wine-cellar-looking things.
Sanella says it's 5 o'clock somewhere in the world, ass.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly it. That's her motto. All right, everybody, that's all we got time for this morning. I hope you have an excellent Monday and a great month of August. If you want to follow Christopher Tozzi, one word, on Instagram, go and see what he's up to, support him, and if you can, donate as well. Otherwise, have an awesome day and an awesome week, and we will see you tomorrow at 6 a.m. bright and early. Cheers, everyone. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye. CliffCentral.com.